All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Tuesday, December 20th. Coming up this hour, State of the State 2022. Deja vu for 2023. Also coming up on Friday, we're slated to have an interview with Congressman Mark Pocan, who recently traveled to Cuba and talks about the prospects for a new era of trade and goodwill. And as somebody who has been to Cuba, I can tell you it's so long overdue. And hopefully Pocan and the Biden administration and others can find a way to make that happen. If you'd like to reach us, you can call the usual studio line, 844-967-2789, or 715-388-7155. Our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Aaron Zommers is here with us as well, and we will take your phone calls and talk about whatever's on your mind today. Could be favorite Christmas song. I don't know if we're going to get to it today, Aaron. It might be for tomorrow, but there is a Washington Post article that I saw was published this morning about the 1987 Christmas album, A Very Special Christmas, and how it, the headline says it changed the way the holidays sound. I think that might be overselling it a bit, but you know, it was a new era of Christmas music and holiday music, and not just the old, you know, Gene Autry and Bobby Helms and all those from the 60s. Let's see, 1987. Oh, you hadn't been born for a few years yet, had you? So I suppose it's not that groundbreaking an album for you.
Yeah, it's a little over a decade before my time.
Okay. No big deal for you, but we will come back to that. Also, let's see, I wanted to talk a bit about the January 6th committee that had its final hearing, is putting out its report. The executive summary came out yesterday. There were criminal recommendations that came from it. Again, people are looking back at, you know, what have we learned from the committee? One of those things, of course, now is what's in those referrals against Trump. Also learned from yesterday's hearing, there's more evidence that Trump resisted urging peaceful protests even before January 6th, when people understood. I mean, I certainly did. And I don't think that's a real piece of being, you know, braggadocious or anything. I knew that from the very beginning when I saw that first tweet to come to DC on January 6th will be wild. I knew the significance. I knew it was happening January 6th. They were going to count the electoral votes and he was going to try to find a way to interfere with it. And it kind of mystified me that more people weren't taking that seriously. And so I made sure I was, you know, free that day to kind of keep an eye on things. And sure enough, the mob got angry and stormed the Capitol. And I mean, I'm not the only one. People knew the potential, that how unsafe it could be. We've also learned new details on the hundreds of weapons that were in the crowd that day, firearms and otherwise. There is new evidence that Trump was waved off a voting machine conspiracy theory. There is Giuliani's outrageous lies, one of the headlines says, about the election that he was telling. And there's more about the Secret Service claim from White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson about a possible altercation in the presidential limo between Trump and the leader of his Secret Service detail. And again, more signs of obstruction of justice on the part of Donald Trump, who did not want in any way, shape, or form to acknowledge that he had actually lost. Keeping in mind that, I mean, he lost the popular vote the first time around, too. He understands that he basically, you know, snuck in 2016, thanks to a lot of folks who stayed at home, complacent about Hillary Clinton, or who just couldn't, you know, be bothered to vote for somebody who wasn't their first choice in the Democratic primary. Trump knows that he was on thin ice at best. And rather than just accept that and go back to a life at what passes for the lavish lifestyle of Mar-a-Lago, he decided to try to stay in power. He liked the trappings of power. He liked the power. He liked hearing the praise from people like, you know, Putin and Kim Jong-il from North Korea and so forth. And look where it's led us. Look at the point that it's taken us to. We now have a Republican Party in wild disarray and is caught up in the fantasy to the point where they're going to spend a lot of time next year trying to discredit the January 6th committee and its report, much like they continue to try to discredit the 2020 election. But they can't, because there's no there in terms of, you know, evidence that would prove otherwise. But this is where we find ourselves. And again, the January 6th committee is wrapping up its work, and we will have to take it from there to see if somehow justice can finally be brought to Trump and his ilk. Green Bay Packers beat the LA Rams 24-12 on Monday Night Football. A.J. Dillon, 2 touchdowns. Aaron Rodgers threw a touchdown pass to Aaron Jones. The playoff scenario is apparently still there, but all kinds of dominoes would have to fall. The Packers now visit Miami next Sunday before they have the final 2 games of the season at home. They will host the Vikings and then the Lions. The Bucks, meanwhile, beat the New Orleans Pelicans 128-119. Giannis had 42 points, 10 rebounds. Drew Holiday, 18 points and 11 assists. And the Bucks will next play tomorrow night at Cleveland. They lead the NBA's Eastern Conference by a half a game. Let's take a break. Have more Wisconsin headlines and conversation after this on Up North News Radio. Let's go ahead and take a little time and examine the 35th anniversary of A Very Special Christmas, the album that came out October 12th of 1987, 35 years ago. It was, of course, still we're at the peak MTV era. And it's not like Christmas and pop music, you know, didn't exist before. Obviously, you had, Bing Crosby's White Christmas, and then you had him teaming up with David Bowie later on. You know, Elton John, Motown artists, others had done Christmas music in the past. But there's an article that's been put together in this morning's Washington Post by Travis Andrews, who says that getting as many big stars together on the album in 1987 was done by producer Jimmy Iovine. And, you know, you had everybody coming together for a good cause. It benefited Special Olympics. And that the article argues that Christmas music and holiday music hasn't been the same since, because essentially this album made it cool, and that now pretty much every pop star does Christmas tunes and holiday tunes. I don't know that I would necessarily go that far, Aaron, but yeah, can you name a pop star that doesn't have a Christmas song?
I don't think I can. So yeah, good job, Jimmy Iovine, I guess. Like, yeah, now all artists pretty much do Christmas music, but it does change how we listen to Christmas music. But did it make it better is my question. Because I don't know about you, but I don't think this is anybody's favorite version of Winter Wonderland. That comes from somebody who automatically likes something better if it has synthesizers in it.
you're right. I mean, look, here's the original track on this, the listings, if you will, the track list. You had the Pointer Sisters with Santa Claus Is Coming to Town. I don't really remember it that well. Eurythmics, again, I know it, but not my favorite version of Winter Wonderland. Whitney Houston, Do You Hear What I Hear? It's a nice staple. It's Whitney. I mean, come on. Bruce Springsteen's Merry Christmas Baby is, again, it's a modern classic now, not nearly as classic as his Santa Claus Is Coming to Town live version, you know, where he asks the band if they've been good this year. That is a modern day Christmas classic from The Boss. The Pretenders, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, was a little on the sappy side. I do like John Mellencamp's version of I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus. That is a nice, I don't know what you'd call it, rockabilly type tune. So it is great to have that one on there. I'm going to kill my video feed here, Aaron, just in case the audio is getting a little bit glitchy. You let me know if we need to do more with that. There was Sting and Gabriel's Message. Again, I hate to say it, but pretty forgettable. Now, Christmas in Hollis by Run DMC is a classic in rap circles and R&B circles. You have U2 doing Baby Please Come Home at Christmas. And the article goes on to say that this was a real departure from what U2 was doing at the time. Madonna with Santa Baby. I would contend that is the worst version of Santa Baby ever done. I mean, I've always said that Madonna completely sounds like she's mailing it in on that one. Just do the Cupid doll voice and get rid of it. Bob Seger, the Silver Bullet Band, Little Drummer Boy. Again, it's nice. Not the best version. Bryan Adams had a decent run, Rudolph Run. Bon Jovi, Backdoor Santa. Honestly, don't know that song at all.
You got me either.
Anything?
Nope.
No,
never heard
nothing.
It.
No. Alison Moyet, The Coventry Carol, and then Stevie Nicks' Silent Night. And again, the Stevie Nicks version, you know, again, just didn't feel like there was a lot poured into it. It was, you know, just kind of spoken. However, my criticisms notwithstanding, it was a big seller, and it was arguably something that changed the way that pop artists, look at Christmas these days.
I would argue that potentially that makes it okay for these pop artists to make mediocre to terrible Christmas music, because there's so much of it out there. I cannot remember the artist. I'll have to ask my friends later, see if I can figure it out. But there was, I think in Petco, when one of my friends used to work there, they played a cover of, it might have been Santa Baby, I'm not sure 100%. I just remember it was not only one of the worst covers of that, but for sure the worst Christmas song I've ever heard. And it's up there in the worst any song. There's a lot of bad Christmas music now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's just because, again, if you use any of the, you know, the quote unquote classics, the remakes, you have to find a way to completely reimagine it, or you're just doing a different version of a song people have heard 10,000 times, which is why I love Springsteen's, you know, Santa Claus Is Coming to Town. You'd never heard it done like that before. So the album itself got written up in this article today to give its origin story, which I did not know. It was about Jimmy Iovine sitting on the floor of his sister's house in Staten Island. And he was on the phone with Springsteen when he made the decision. It was 1985 at that point, and Iovine's father, Vincent, had died suddenly. And he said he had an extraordinary relationship with his father, and it was very devastating because he, his mother, and his father, they'd all died within 8 weeks from natural causes. Both of his parents did. Springsteen had called to offer his condolences, Iovine recalls. And at that moment, he said, I'm just going to make a Christmas album for my dad. And he asked Springsteen if he could help out. And Springsteen said he would. And Jimmy Iovine, who was recently inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, said, I got off the phone and I put all the energy I've ever put into anything into the making of this album. And it's what led to, you know, something that has been, according to the music critic and author Rob Sheffield, a huge album in terms of its impact, nothing like it. It changed the place of Christmas in pop culture. It represented a before and after moment, a thing that never existed before and was not going to exist to this level again, because now you have every pop star that wants to make some kind of a holiday album. I would say yes, because there's, you know, money that's in there. But once Iovine heard about the possibility of turning this into a charitable album and helping benefit Special Olympics, you now had another reason for artists who wanted to come in and make the album a success. And so much time and effort was put into that. And you now have, like I said, Christmas in Hollis is something that music critics say is going to be a song that people will reference forever in hip hop circles, because they did not want the song to be a novelty. They wanted it to be a staple. And that's what it became. For Bobby Shriver, again, part of the Shriver Kennedy clan behind Special Olympics, the session with Whitney Houston was especially moving. Bobby Shriver recalls that that Whitney Houston looked like a kid. She was chewing on some gum while listening to the track for Do You Hear What I Hear? She removed the gum, strolled into the booth, put the headphones on, sang it, walked back out, looked for her gum, popped it back in. Meanwhile, everybody else in the group had their jaw on the ground. Her voice was so big and bold and beautiful, and she sang the whole thing in one take. That's nice. It's also what singers do if they're that good. But, they put that together. The rest essentially became history, and it's something that we've been listening to for the past 35 years. And again, have it to thank for many other pop artists wanting to do tunes as well. Along the same lines of Christmas and the spirit of Christmas, I also wanted to call attention to an opinion piece that John Nichols put in the Cap Times recently with the headline, "Taking the Side of the Rebel Jesus." Pope Francis has, since assuming the leadership of the Catholic Church almost a decade ago, Nichols writes, maintained a wise critique of the excesses of capitalism. Even as billionaires have dominated the headlines, the Pope has spoken of, quote, a new tyranny of unfettered capitalism and the threat to humanity posed by, quote, an unjust international system in which king money is at the center. The pontiff has encouraged a broader discourse about an economic order in which so few have so much and so many have so little. In so doing, he has put broader economic debates in perspective, especially when he has argued that, quote, as long as the problems of the poor are not radically resolved by rejecting the absolute autonomy of markets and financial speculation, and by attacking the structural cases of inequality, no solution will be found for the world's problems, or that matter, for any problems. That's an amazing line from the Pope right there. It sums it up so well. That again, we keep hearing that the markets, the invisible hand of the markets, is a cure-all, and that capitalism, without any explanation of what type you're talking about, is the be-all and end-all. And that to suggest that anything other than the current incarnation of capitalism would be better is going to get you labeled as a socialist or a communist or something. To critique anything that might possibly be improved on today's economic system. The Pope grabs it, says we have to stop thinking that, absolute autonomy of the markets and financial speculation is the way to go. We have to stop thinking that you can't attack the structural causes of inequality. But we aren't doing that, because right now we have allowed a myth to take hold, an incomplete, an inaccurate definition, that when we talk about equality of opportunity, people right away think you're talking about equality of outcomes. Again, the whole notion of something being socialist or communist or what have you. The two are not the same. Nobody's asking for equality of outcomes. Well, some may be. We certainly all deserve, equal treatment. We are, again, raised to believe that we are all created equally. But by and large, the critiques on capitalism are about being able to do that while still having equality of opportunity, a good school that you can go to live in safety, to not have to work, and still be in poverty. Back to Nichols' article, the Pope's critics suggest he has promoted a radical analysis. The Pope has. No. He is not forging a new theology, Nichols writes. Rather, he is returning to a very old one, that of a teacher who, we are told, drove the money changers from the courtyards of the temple, and said to a wealthy young man, "If you want to be complete, go sell what you own and give your money to the poor." And he then references an author of Radical Jesus, A Graphic History of Faith, that we all remember that Jesus is somebody who spoke truth to power and challenged an existing order with a message of liberation and deliverance for the dispossessed. So again, that's John Nichols. You can finish that article in the Cap Times. And between that and whatever way you choose to listen to music this holiday season, hope that you will keep in mind, we don't have to accept this situation as it is. We can make the changes that allow more people to know that it's Christmas time at this time of year. This is Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
All right, let's talk about some state of the state stasis. And I know it's a little early now. The governor's state of the state address won't happen for at least a month or so, I believe. But we're past the election. We're heading into a second term from Governor Tony Evers. And as I was looking through material to wrap up the end of the year, to look back on 2022, found my notes from this year's State of the State address and thought it might be interesting to look through some of that just to see, you know, what, if anything, came of these things. And yes, I understand the point that's going to be made is one that isn't lost on most of you. The legislature gaveled itself out of session, you know, in late February, early March, and never came back. Earned its paycheck. Well, didn't earn its paycheck, collected their paychecks, and did nothing. With a record surplus sitting there, not being put to work for you and me and everybody else in Wisconsin because the Republicans running the legislature wanted to play games. But still, it's worth noting that there were proposals that were made. There were things that could be done. And so I wanted to call this up. You know, we see that Minority Leader Greta Neubauer of Racine, she was the new Democratic leader in the Assembly, and we plan to talk to her this week as well, by the way. They invited some frontline workers as their guests to thank all the first responders, healthcare workers, teachers, grocery workers for their service. And they talked at the time about how Wisconsin, they knew Wisconsin's economy was bouncing back from the pandemic. There was record low unemployment even at the start of this year. Already at the start of this year was the largest projected surplus in state history. It has basically doubled since then. And Evers wanted to make clear that even though he's governor, he was also going to be a candidate for re-election and said there is a record to run on. That's what he said in an interview with Up North News, you know, ahead of it. So Evers did mention that there is a surplus. He talked about the allocation of pandemic relief that allowed the economy to grow, talked about investing $1 billion into small businesses, farmers, tourism, lodging, the entertainment industries, and yet more could be done. Now, the reaction to the speech came, reporters went to former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clefish, the person that pretty much everybody assumed was going to be the Republican nominee. Tim Michaels had not flown in from Connecticut yet to drop, you know, $8 million into a primary and to wrest the nomination away from Clefish. But Clefish's reaction to what Evers, to Evers' remarks was that as governor, I will make sure Wisconsin gets back to work. Our kids get back to schools. We back the badge. And we give our government back to the people of Wisconsin. And in there, you might see some of the reasons, you know, why Rebecca Clefish lost the primary. Again, there was all sizzle, no steak. You know, to say Wisconsin's going to get back to work. Again, we already had record low unemployment. The thing about kids getting back to school was, again, a shot at COVID safeguards, which still bothered a lot of people that they would choose essentially the coronavirus over the safety of their kids and educators and parents. Backing the badge, of course, you know, that those are empty words if you're busy cutting the state budget or busy putting pressure on local budgets to the point where they have to make cutbacks. Instead, Evers was able to tout how he was able to keep all 375 transportation projects during the 2020 construction season on track and improved at that point 1,700 miles of highways and more than 1,200 bridges, that there was $100 million that went to support Wisconsin farmers through a farm support program. And there were things that were going to be done for clean water, things that were going to be done for the UW system. And then there was going to be the whole notion of protecting democracy. Near the end of Evers' speech, he said, "Democracy is not a prophecy. It is self-actuating. We must choose every day to continue this grand experiment. We must choose every day to accept the duty our forebears entrusted to us. We must choose every day to affirm the certainty of this legacy for future generations." In response, Senate Republican leader Devin Lemahieu gave the official Republican response and said that because of Evers and President Biden, there was runaway inflation, rising crime, closed schools, supply chain disruptions, restrictive COVID rules that no longer make sense. Again, not proposing anything, no ideas, just the criticism of things that they didn't like that didn't lead to anything that people could, a voter could hang their hats on. I thought I'd look back and see. Let's go back another year when Up North News first came on the scene in January of 2020. Governor Evers was making a State of the State address. And at the time, you might recall Evers actually, he gave lawmakers a to-do list, essentially a homework assignment from Evers, himself a teacher. He wrote at the time, "I am hopeful that the legislature will remain in session as long as is necessary to accomplish these important goals. It would be unfortunate if the legislature were to adjourn without making meaningful progress on the issues Wisconsinites care about." Well, as we would learn later, the legislature would again put itself on a paid vacation, this one about 9 months long, at the very beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. The topics on the homework list included nonpartisan redistricting reform to end gerrymandering, capping the price of insulin, improving the processing of sexual assault evidence, closing the dark store tax loophole for big retailers, and improved services to Wisconsin's homeless population. That's all from nearly 3 years ago. And as you can see, some of those things are still left to be done. Evers had put forward a plan a year ago in the State of the State address that would increase school funding, provide Wisconsinites with $150 tax rebate checks, and invest more in childcare. Republicans would not go along with that. So here we sit after speech after speech after speech, waiting to see if this time around will Wisconsinites see from their Republican legislature actual positive action. Over at UpNorthNewsWI.com, we continue tracking some holiday favorites as we move into the season. And one tasty one caught my eye, and that was the story behind Wisconsin's state pastry, the Kringle, that Kevin Revelinsky pulled up. I know we've mentioned this before, but I wanted to again promote that one for you to take a look at. They talk about, Kevin does in the article, about how baker Loritz Bent Benson immigrated to the United States from Denmark in his 20s. He was born in 1905, made his way to Racine, where there was already an established community of Danish Americans. He bought a corner lot in Racine, and 88 years later, Benson's Bakery is still operating at its original location. Great-grandson Ben Benson III is at the helm, and It is the only one still rolling and filling all of its pastries entirely by hand, all 36 layers of it. Some days they produce as few as 100 Kringles a day, but in the final 6 weeks of the year, that number jumps to 2,000 a day. And shipping alone accounts for 40,000 of those Kringle orders. It takes 20 hours to make 2,000 pastries by hand, according to Ben. And that means the starting time for the bakers is typically 3 a.m. But in November, they come in sometimes before midnight and stay well into the morning after the storefront has opened in order to allow people to have those flaky flavors like traditional almond and raisin. And then, of course, you've got all the others that come along. A pecan with butterscotch is one that is kind of underrated, but could be a bigger seller. And on Kevin's article goes. So again, Benson's is over on Washington Avenue in Racine, but there is, of course, also five locations for the O&H Danish Bakery. There's the Larson Bakery. There's Racine Danish Kringles. Then outside of Racine, you got Uncle Mike's Bake Shop on Mason Street in Green Bay, Lane's Bakery on Park Street in Madison, and the Fosdell Home Bakery in Stoughton. So plenty of options for folks to choose if they are hoping to get a real taste of the season. I did order from one of those places once for Christmas gifts. I'm really glad I did. But now the catalogs, they just keep coming and coming and coming. And honestly, if I ordered one Kringle for every catalog that came in, I wouldn't be able to afford anything else. But that's how I guess, Aaron, catalogs are like the pop-up ads of your mailbox.
Yeah.
And that they just, you know, whether you order it or not, the next one's going to come. You can close the window, but it's going to pop up again.
It's a lot easier to ignore pop-up ads or like emails and stuff because you can just not look at it, but mail will pile up.
Oh, yeah. Yep. No doubt there. Again, a reminder that we are in for some very serious weather, and to please do take it seriously. There's going to be a lot of blowing snow, and the wind chills are just going to be stupid cold to end the week. And this is a time when everybody's making plans to do big drives. You know, we're doing a big drive today because we know we can't put it off. We can't wait till tomorrow or Thursday because folks are going to get stranded. And I really hope we keep that number as small as possible. Back to state issues for a sec. When we were talking to Kristen Lyerly the other day, she mentioned hearing Minnesota Governor Tim Walz doing a radio interview and talking about their record surplus. And because Democrats control both houses of the legislature, they're going to be able to put together a surplus plan that emphasizes attracting more people to Minnesota because they have a labor shortage there as well. But in their case, they actually appreciate workers and they appreciate education and they appreciate giving folks a quality of life and not just saying, well, we're going to cut taxes and regulation. Not something that typically attracts a young family someplace. They need more than that. They need to know their kids are going to go to good schools and such. Well, there was actually more to the interview than that, and I wanted to pass along as well that Governor Walz and legislative Democrats in the Gopher State are also signaling that recreational marijuana could pass the legislature next session, saying that and get where Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, puts the credit. He said in this radio appearance, or he gave credit to Jesse Ventura. Jesse Ventura, the former professional wrestler who shocked the world by getting elected governor of Minnesota in, when was that? 1998, I believe. And he had been a proponent for legalizing marijuana. And Walz credits Ventura for starting the conversation. And we're now at the point where 21 states have legalized marijuana for recreational use. Walz said in the interview, it just makes sense. Prohibition didn't work. We get better regulation this way. I just mentioned that I think it would be important to recognize Ventura and ask him if he would be there to get this done. Now, if that happens, And again, Minnesota has partially legalized marijuana use, but in going all the way, it again would make Wisconsin pretty much an island. I think only Iowa would be one of our border states that does not have at least some form of legalized pot use. And again, that is business, that is tax revenue, that is traffic, that is a net minus for Wisconsin, despite overwhelming public support. We'll wrap things up for the day with our friend Chad Holmes next on Up North News Radio. About new classics for Christmas, I'm going to put Kelly Clarkson on that list with Underneath the Tree. It's a couple years old by now, but I would dare say I would play that one a little bit more often than Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You. So now, having laid down that gauntlet, we welcome in Chad Holmes, who will tell us, you know, what team are you on, Team Kelly Clarkson or Team Mariah Carey when it comes to your Christmas pop hits?
I'm on Team The Waitresses. That's the only Christmas song.
Oh, that is a very good one. Yes.
That's one I will keep on when I hear it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Every time.
Same here. And again, there's just something about it. It tells a story. Tells a story from the standpoint of, you know, a sassy young woman that you'd like to know. And you really feel what she's going through all that year chasing down a boy. So, yeah, great choice out of you. How are you?
I'm doing good.
All right. I mean, you might be, I'm going to get in trouble with the bosses here because I know how hard they work, but you are right up there in terms of hardest working people in the Civic Media family, because you do so much for prep sports. And I'm assuming that kept you busy again last night and kept you from, you know, watching the Monday night Packer game.
I saw some of the Packer game. I had a high school girls basketball game, and actually it was one of those nights where neither team was very sharp offensively. So it made for a more testing broadcast. Some are easier than others, but otherwise, no, it looked like the Packers, at least what I saw, they looked all right. And it looked like Baker Mayfield's best throw is underthrow a wide open receiver and hope for pass interference. So didn't think I was missing too much.
Boy, Baker Mayfield, there's somebody who came in with, you know, great expectations and who has just not followed through with, and is probably going to be better known for his Progressive insurance commercials than his playing career.
Well, he's made a nice career out of that because, yeah, and frankly, he does not look like a great quarterback. He looks a little pudgy to me, and it seems odd.
Well, again, you know, some folks, they get the money. And they say, okay, you know, I got the money and we'll try to have fun with this. But, you know, once the incentive just isn't there the way it is when you're young and hungry for some athletes and for people in other fields as well. You know, the thing about calling the high school games that you mentioned and the challenge when it's not, you know, as flashy as, you know, some games have more action than others. And yet when you're calling a high school game, I would imagine you really, really have to stick to the play-by-play no matter what. I'm thinking specifically of professional announcers. I remember when the Minnesota Timberwolves came on board, and they were terrible those first few seasons. Kevin Harlan did the play-by-play. You listened to him because he was hilarious, telling all these stories. Funny stories, and then every so often he'd kind of mention what was happening on the court, and you don't really have that luxury in what you do.
No, but it's probably for the best. I don't know if I could tell the stories that Kevin Harlan could tell as entertainingly, and I tend to think that staying with the action is probably within my wheelhouse a little bit more.
Yeah, no doubt about that. The weather coming in like it is, and I don't think we can underplay the potential here, but we're getting close to the holiday, so hopefully it doesn't affect a lot of sports schedules and stuff. But what about you? Were you making travel plans for the holidays, or are you going to be able to just hunker down?
Well, I'm staying around here for the weekend. I got family around here, which is nice. Late last week was hard enough. We had some significant snow on Thursday, which led to some postponements. My travel actually is next week. There's a hockey tournament over in Green Bay that I'm going to go to for a couple of days next middle of next week. So hopefully by then things will be calmed down a little bit. But boy, I mean, a week ago there's grass out there. And now, I mean, it is amazing the thickness of the snow on the trees and on the roads and everywhere else. We're in the midst of winter within a week.
Oh, I never even got to talk about that because I was out sick for the second half of last week. But yeah, we got that snow that gave, you know, in that 8 to 10 range around Lake Wissota. And it was definitely top five in terms of the wettest, heaviest stuff that had ever fallen. And I mean, I was unclogging the tube on that snowblower over and over again because it was just spitting out slush that would eventually, you know, clog up on the throw tube. That was not a fun day to do, especially, you know, when you're under the weather as it is, but you got to move it before it freezes.
Absolutely. I mean, I am so tired of slush already. And by the way, when you mentioned Lake Wissota, I always enjoy it because when I go west to either Eau Claire or Chippewa Falls to do a broadcast, I see that sign and I think of you, and I'm going to be going that way on Thursday. So I'll be thinking about you when I go by there to Chippewa Falls on Thursday.
Well, I will definitely be hunkered down at that point. Once I get there, I'm going to, you know, there's the hot cocoa is going to be standing by with, you know, the bottle of peppermint and the bottle of brandy, never far away from it. And, you know, we're looking forward to just a couple of quiet days in between daughter visits. And hopefully everybody who does have to travel is able to do so safely. I got contacted by friends in Canada last night, and they've got a little guy who has really taken to snowboarding, and they were asking about places to stay in the Twin Cities because they're thinking of having him compete in a snowboarding competition in the cities. And it just made me think again of what you're doing. And, you know, all the hotels that I stay at always have, you know, traveling hockey teams in them or some other teams as well. And doing this with a winter sport is just, it's crazy to me, the amount of traveling that's involved and the amount of sacrifice that folks make. And, you know, all the parents that you have to meet, how far they come to cheer their folks on in what might not be a winning effort.
You're right. I mean, especially during the wintertime. And I mean, it's not just around here, but as you say, Canada and all through northern Wisconsin and northern part of the United States, you're exactly right. And I've thought about that. I mean, there's so many travel miles put on. Again, just knock on wood that everybody always gets back and forth safe, number one, let alone the actual athletic aspect to it.
Yeah. And then if your kid shows any potential, any promise whatsoever, that opens up the door to a whole different round of travel, maybe a developmental league or things like that. I mean, and you talk to folks on the radio show about that sometimes.
Yeah, actually, there's a young man who went to Wausau West for his freshman and sophomore years. And then after his sophomore year 2 years ago, the United States National Development Hockey Team, basically it's the team that kind of is for the level below the Olympics, the youth level, he was selected to it, and he's back in town this week. I'm going to have him on my program tomorrow, so it's going to be very interesting to talk to him about that, because it's quite a change for a young man who had been a junior in high school to go off to Michigan and then travel around the country participating in his hockey.
Yeah, it's an entirely different life that I've really come to appreciate with my own travels here in places like here in Kalamazoo. Chad, thanks so much. Have a great show today. Appreciate the visit, and happy holidays to you, sir.
You too, Pat.
All right. Have a great day. Coming up next for everybody, we got Earl Ingram in Waukesha, Stephanie Miller in Madison, Todd Alba for everybody else along the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Have a great day. We'll see you back here on Wednesday.